This podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. Attention, past, present, and future MyBookie players. For this week only, MyBookie is offering a risk-free bet on the Bears-Lions game. Simply choose a team against the spread for up to $250. If you win, congrats. You've got extra holiday spending money. If you lose, congratulations to you as well. MyBookie will give you your money back. It's a no-brainer because you literally cannot lose. It's no risk, all gravy. It doesn't matter whether you're an experienced player or a first-time customer. MyBookie welcomes all to come play, so quit waiting around and sign up today. Do you find yourself wanting to sports bet but have a lot of questions? Don't sweat it. MyBookie's patient customer service team can walk you through the process. And the best part is, if you join now, you'll still have one last shot to take advantage of their incredible sign-up offer. Just log into MyBookie.ag and make your first deposit with promo code MENACE, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your bankroll, and that's on top of the risk-free bet. Let me repeat, that's a guaranteed deposit match and risk-free bet for this week only. So if you're a true football fan, you do not want to let this opportunity pass you by. You simply can't lose. Make sure you do your part to support your team this season. Hop on the gravy train and get in on the action with MyBookie. It is Tuesday, November 26th, Thanksgiving week, and the week of the game. Really excited about the next two episodes. We had a great day today in studio. We had coming up on this episode, Greg Fry, great quarterback, back in the late 80s, early 90s, at Ohio State, and also a college football analyst, high school coach, a quarterback guru. He actually trained me when I was a high school player, but also trained Brady Quinn, my high school teammate. And so we have Greg coming on to provide us some insight into, I guess, his experience with the game, with college football, and also his experience with his intelligence, his analysis of Justin Fields and Ohio State, and just kind of give you a perspective from someone who has really dedicated himself to quarterback play for whatever, 20 years, 30 years, whatever it's been. And a good friend of mine, someone that I've been close with for a long time, played for my grandfather. My grandfather recruited him. So he's coming on the show, really excited about it. Just want to get to the show. Let's get to the show.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts-Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. Team.
What a hit. Denzel Ward. You got barbecue right there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
Did you push yourself to be great today? Did you do it? If you didn't do it, you lost today.
Don't let that beast stand in the way. Go away.
Menace to. All right, before we get started, I guess we are getting started, but before we get to Greg Fry and our time in the studio, which was awesome, it's going to be a longer episode because he has so much to offer, so many insights, so many stories, so many cool things just to listen to and really learn about not only the history of Ohio State and the game, but also the history of college football. And he's a unique perspective and really one of the inspirations for me starting this. And I mentioned it here in the interview coming up, but he really influenced me in my, I guess, my quest to revamp myself and rebuild a life, because I was so enthralled with how he was as an analyst with my grandfather, and the show that they put together was phenomenal. And I kind of want to start with a story about this rivalry, and it is the greatest rivalry in all of sport. It is. I've been associated with many rivalries, and this one is just different. And I want to take you back to 1987. I was 3 years old, and my grandfather was the head coach at The Ohio State University. Obviously, I was very young. Don't recall a lot of it, but one of the earliest memories of my life was after my grandfather got fired at Ohio State. I was at his house, much like our entire extended family was, and the band came to play Buckeye songs for him in support because it was a very controversial firing. And nowadays, it probably wouldn't be that controversial, but back then it was very controversial because he was beloved. He was very, the Buckeye faithful loved him as the coach, loved what he was doing with the team, and realized he was dealt a kind of a shitty hand that year in 1987. He had one of the best teams in the country coming back, and then come to find out, probably late winter, Chris Carter had taken money from an agent, and then was he actually, here's a side story. My grandfather was to a fault very loyal to his players and his family and anyone in his life that he felt like he could trust and loved. And he sat Chris Carter down and said, "Did you take money from the agent?" And Chris Carter, like a true shitbag, said, "No, I did not." And so what did he do? He went after everyone that said Chris Carter took money from an agent because he thought he was standing up for a kid that was one of his. And here's the reality of the situation. He then, because there's a guy with the last name Wolf that ran 10 TV. He ran Columbus Sports Media, a lot like you see now in Columbus Sports Media, but he ran Columbus Sports Media and he decided to run a story that Chris Carter took money from an agent, which he did. So there's no fault to him. But my grandfather, after inquiring Chris Carter, "Did you take money from an agent?" He said, "No." He decided that that was unacceptable, that a Columbus news station was going to out one of his players wrongfully. So he pulled all of his shows, his TV show, all of his public media, he pulled from that station. And that was the political mistake that he made. He got fired because of that mistake, not because of wins and losses, not because of records, but because of that mistake. That was the reality back then. So fast forward, he ends up getting fired. And my earliest memory, I think as a person, was at his house after he got fired. The band came, played a number of Buckeye songs to show their support because no one was supportive of this firing other than the Wolf family and Ed Jennings, the president of the university, to the point where the athletic director resigned because he refused to fire my grandfather. But I was there as a three-year-old kid, almost three. I was two and a half, a little over two and a half, almost three. And I remember it vividly because this icon, this man that was the toughest human being I've ever seen. And I've talked about him on the show a couple times. He was in tears. And I, as a young kid, I didn't know how to handle that. It was very bizarre. So, that's the earliest of my memories. And then they go out. And so, which this is uncommon in college football. He got fired the Monday before the rivalry game, before the Michigan game on Monday. But bizarrely, which never happens now, they allowed him to coach the game. And so he had four captains. William White, who's very prominent in the Columbus community. His son, Brennan White, is now on the Buckeyes. Chris Spielman, you might have heard of him. Very prominent football player. One of the best linebackers to ever play. Tom Tupa, a great quarterback that ended up having a great NFL career. And then Eric Kumerow. And for those of you who don't know Eric Kumerow, especially Buckeye fans, he's very relevant to recent Buckeye history as Eric Kumerow's nephews were great players at Ohio State. Those nephews, Joey and Nick Bosa. So they went out in the game and they put on Earl headbands. It was something that one of the team leaders came up with. They were going to wear headbands and write the word Earl on them in support of their coach. And they went out and upset a Michigan team in his final game, carried him off the field. Phenomenal, phenomenal game, and obviously very close to my heart. So I want to start this rivalry week off with a more personal episode, both on what I just outlined and detailed and talked about, but also I want to get to Greg Fry, who played an integral role in a very specific situation in that game, very reminiscent to Dwayne Haskins 2 years ago, where he had to come in and had to make a play to to win the game. And it ultimately changed the trajectory of his career. So Greg and I are going to talk about that in a minute. And I'm really excited about this episode. But before we get to that, one more word from our sponsor, and then we'll get this party started. Are you tired of paying your bookie every weekend because your lock of the week is as reliable as a Jim Harbaugh game plan? What if you could leverage a data analytics group who has consistently predicted results for the last 4 years with a 60% documented success rate? The guys at ProAthletics.com have done just that and want you to get in on the action for free this week. Yep, for free. With 100% transparency, their model has resulted in them being the only handicapping group in the world to finish in the top 100 the last 3 years in the Las Vegas Super Contest, the globe's largest handicapping contest. I personally used their picks this weekend and went 7-1 in college football. I'm 18-5 overall using their college football platform for the last 3 weeks. Yeah, you heard me correct. 18-5. No joke, it's free money. I hit a 3-team parlay on Saturday. They want you to see the truth so bad that they are giving away a free week of all sports with code MENACE. Again, code MENACE gets you a 1 week VIP pass for free. No strings attached, no BS. Trust me and try it out. You literally have nothing to lose. If you want to sign up for the remainder of the season, you can use code MENACE50, the number 50, for 50% off any package. Don't let another losing weekend get the best of your wallet. Head to Pro, as in P-R-O, mathletics.com to start winning today. All right, welcome back to Menace 2 Sports, the insider analysis show. We have a special guest, special for a number of reasons. One, because of this week, what it is. Two, because when I was a kid growing up, this man had a lot of impact on me in several different avenues. One, I used to go to my grandfather's radio show he had. I guess it wasn't just his. That's not fair, right? But Greg Fry's in studio. He was on the radio show with my grandfather, and I always thought he was phenomenal at it. And it really was part of the inspiration and why I did this. He also coached me at quarterback when I was in high school. And Greg, I didn't tell you this beforehand. I should have, but I don't care. I read an article earlier today where you had said that the best athlete you ever coached at quarterback was Brady Quinn, and I got a little pissed. I'm not going to lie.
Well, and I did defend your honor, by the way, many times, because I saw your development as a quarterback, and I felt like you could have been a very good high school quarterback. But the problem was the guy in front of you ended up, you know, in the Heisman room. He was pretty good.
He was decent, huh?
And by the time he was a junior, like he threw the ball so hard. I've never seen a ball thrown that hard by a kid that age. So
right.
You had a problem with that guy in front of you.
Well,
but your development came along, I must say.
That's a fact. It was one of those, I think him and I both were working out with you, and I was like, I probably should just go run routes for him right now. This would be way smarter.
Well, I will say, though, I do recall watching a high school playoff game, and you played DB, and you played very well.
I did. It was a rare occurrence, but I played decent sometimes. Well, I am excited to have this conversation and excited that you came in. Huge week. It's the biggest week of the year, right?
Without a doubt. It's the game, and there's so much history of this game, which we're going to get into. And given the stakes of what's transpired this year for both teams, there's a lot at stake.
A lot at stake. It seems like so many times, just in my lifetime, 35 years, so many times this game has had just incredible ramifications, and this being one of those, which happened a bunch, a spoiler opportunity for one side or the other. And a lot of times those were spoiled.
Watch out, because you know, when you get a team in a rivalry like this that has so much to play for, you know, maybe they're not going to win the Big Ten East, and all of a sudden they have a chance to play spoiler and win at home and really define their season. You know, that team up north has that ability this year. And you know, I've been on the flip side of that. You know, yeah. I've been on a team that's gone up there and done that. And I've been up there a couple times when they've done it to us,
right,
in undefeated seasons. And I know what that tastes like. It doesn't take much. It's you know, the underdog in sports, obviously, is you know, when your grandfather used to say this, watch out for the team that's got something to play for. Watch out, buddy. Like, he'd shake the finger, watch out, buddy.
Right.
And, you know, clearly both teams have a lot to play for. But the underdog in this game, there's a history of that for sure.
And it's almost a beaten dog up in Ann Arbor right now. They not only have a lot to play for, to play spoiler, but you got to imagine at some point they're really tired of getting their ass beat, right?
True. And the thing that's hit me looking at this game is history. I have a belief that history has a way of protecting itself. Mm-hmm. And just when you think it's just, well, it's not going to change, it'll change. It always does. And that's the one thing that concerns me about this week more than anything. You know, you look at the X and O's, they're very clear where they are. You can tell who the better team is. But we know in a rivalry situation, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. But it hit me last week, 1969. It's been coming back to me and coming back to me. And I'm not saying that to be doomsday or anything like that. but I pay attention to history.
Absolutely.
And I remember back to, you know, certainly the 1990s when it was flipped the other way. Mm-hmm. And that team up north was just dominating the Buckeyes. And it didn't seem like it was ever going to change. And it did. So, you know, sooner or later, history will protect itself. I just hope it's not this time.
You hope it's not this year. Well, I wanted to talk to you because I know you and I have had this conversation several times. My grandfather, it was one of his favorite stories to tell. And for those people that maybe are younger or don't know your story initially, your first real game playing quarterback at Ohio State was very Dwayne Haskins-esque in his how he had to come in the Michigan game kind of unexpectedly and has to go win the game. And you had a similar experience. So I wanted to hear you talk about it and just kind of give us some perspective on what that was like.
What's so cool because, you know, 2 years ago when that happened with Haskins, like I'm watching the game. I wasn't at the game and I'm watching it. And my skin was boiling because I'm like, I was reliving that feeling.
Right.
So to set the scene, it was 1987 and I was the backup quarterback to Tom Tupa. It was my redshirt freshman year. And, you know, we went in that game with a very up and down season. Chris Carter got booted off the team earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we would have had a great football team. Missing him really hurt.
Yep.
So we had an up and down year. We lost some really tough games down the stretch. And, you know, your grandfather's job was on the line. And on the Monday of that week, he got told before practice that he had been relieved of his duties and he was going to get to coach that game. And, you know, I could probably take an hour on what transpired that week and the life lessons that I learned from him. And I will talk about that for a second because, you know, that was a situation where the thing that he was most passionate about in his life got ripped away.
Yep.
And yet he went into extremely unselfish mode and looked us in the eye on Monday and said, look, you know, we're going to coach you guys. Let me take care of all the other stuff. You guys do your job as players. We're going to coach you with the intent of going up there and winning that game on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you what, you could hear a pin drop in that meeting room. It was unbelievable and extremely emotional. So fast forward to Saturday, you know, it's funny. And I tell the story that if you would have watched me warm up that day, you'd probably wonder why that kid was on scholarship because I was dealing with tendonitis in my elbow. My arm was shot because I had thrown so much in the off season. You know, it's one of those lessons you learn, right? I was so jacked up about the opportunity to have a chance to really play that my arm couldn't last the season. So I did everything you could imagine, including taking a shot in the elbow, not from Dr. Strauss, by the way.
Thank God.
Yeah. But he was there. and just to keep playing. So, you know, warming up that my arm was killing me. It was cold. You know, time flies. It was 18 degrees, 20 degrees. It was a cold day and I struggled. So, you know, we get in the game and Coach Bruce had always really done a fabulous job of preparing me because you never know. I mean, when you're the backup,
you have to.
You know, you're one play away. And all season long I had done that, but it was waning on me because, you know, I had some opportunities and he tossed me in a couple times when I least expected it. He threw me in against Michigan State about a month before and they won the Big Ten that year. I mean, the game was very close in the fourth quarter. He tossed me in what? I mean, I'm in the huddle, like, stretching my arm. Like, what's going on here?
Catch you off guard a little bit,
He did. And he also, the Big Ten opener that year was against Illinois. And I'm telling you this because it sets the scene. Because he told me on Monday, hey, you're going to play this week. I want you to get ready. You're going to play this week. I'm like, yes, all right. You know, so, I mean, I just puckered right away, right?
Yeah.
And I was puckered all week, right? And I was doing everything I could. Well, he didn't play me. And after, I'm like, okay, I get it, you bastard. I get it. I get it.
You got me.
You got me. So it elevated my focus throughout the week. So, you know, we get in that game, and Tom Tupa played a great game. He was our starting quarterback. My man Carlos Snow had a great game. Everett Ross, Vince Workman. I mean, those guys, we had a great plan. Again, the underdog in that situation.
Yeah.
And talk about a team that's got something to play for.
Right.
You know, you can go back and look at the Earl headbands. That was the seniors came up with that. Prior to that game, I knew nothing about that.
Right.
And they handed them out for, you know, you talk about solidarity walking on the field. I mean, whoo. It was intense.
I can't imagine.
So we're trailing in the game. I think it was 13-0 or 14-0 early. We get back in the game. So midway through the fourth quarter, game's tied. And if I recall, Michigan had the ball and they were driving and they fumbled. Defense comes up with the ball. We get an offense. So we start driving. It's a second down play, and Tom Tupa, I think he was trying to throw the ball and stepped up in the pocket and just got drilled. Like, he took one in the kidney. And then things kind of happen in slow motion. So he starts to get up, and then he kind of goes down on a knee. And it's in limbo. And, like, this is so slow motion for me. So I'm standing next to, I believe it was Billy Hill. Mm-hmm. My man Billy Hill, God bless him, right, who was our head trainer at the time. He's standing right next to me. And I know the rule. The minute the trainer steps on the field, that guy's got to come out for a play.
Oh, yeah.
So my heart's starting to palpitate, right? And by the way, I'm freezing my ass off. And I'm like, you know, I was almost in that mode, like, I'm not going to play. Like, can we just get out of here, you know?
Right.
And you fight those battles mentally. But now my heart rate is starting to jack up. And I'm just watching Billy Hill's feet. And I'm watching Tupa. And then Tupa just goes down in a heap. And Billy starts walking. I'm like, holy shit.
I'm about to go.
And it was like, and I ripped off my coat. And I grabbed Gary Cliff. Gary Cliff was a backup receiver, great guy, great friend. And I'm like, let's go throw a few. You know, I'm like, I got to get a few throws in, right?
Right.
And it was perfectly played. You know, Billy Hill and Bill Davis went out there and took their time, which gave me time.
You had to warm up.
Right.
You need it.
So I go back to throw him. My first throw, and it was like sticking knives in my elbow. Like, it hurt. Like, you can't believe. It's cold. I haven't thrown a ball. And the second throw, I about knocked him over.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm ready. I mean, the adrenaline shot hit me. I'm like, I'm ready.
Let's go.
So I go up to Earl, and, you know, it's amazing what goes through your mind in these situations, right?
Oh, yeah.
So as a quarterback, your other fear is don't drop the snap. Like, you can't. Like, that's one of those wakes you up in the middle of the night, right?
Absolutely.
So Earl brings the whole offense over while we had time. And again, the trainers milked it. So I took a couple snaps with Jeff Uhlenhake. So that gave me, I'm like, okay, I'm good. Like, if I get the snap, I'll make the play.
Right.
But just don't drop the epic snap, right?
Just let's baby steps. Let's get it started, right?
So Earl calls, you know, at the time, he calls a pass play. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't know all the stuff going on behind the scenes. He tells me afterwards.
Years later,
and you get this as a coach, right?
Oh, yeah.
The scared coaches in the booth are screaming, don't let him throw it. Don't let him throw it.
Absolutely.
And Earl's like, F you guys. We're throwing it. Damn it. And I'm sure he said it with a little more passion. So he calls a pass play, turn back protection, you know, easy over under route. You got an outside guy. One's clearing. Two's running like a 9 yard out. Vince Workman was two running like a 20 yard, you know, call it. Kind of a flag rollover.
Yeah.
Simple three-level route, right?
Right.
And our tight end, I believe, was Alex Higdon running a 9 yard. So it's a real simple read.
Yeah.
So
up and down the ladder.
Right?
Yep.
Pretty simple. And I could do it in my sleep, but it just happens to be it's third and nine at midfield against Michigan on national TV, and here we are, right?
Yeah, the simplest things seem a little more difficult, right?
So we tried out, and again, Coach Bruce, brilliant. Brilliant play call. Mm-hmm. He called on a quick count, which was just huge for a couple reasons. So one, I go out in the huddle and I'm thinking, okay, these guys got a blitz. I mean, come on, freshman quarterbacks. I'm thinking
absolutely
situationally, freshmen, they're not gonna sit back.
No.
Right? But I don't think they thought we were gonna throw the ball.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
So the chess match, you know, Earl won the chess match on that. So we get in the huddle, and what are the veteran offensive linemen? What are they saying? Greg, now go. If it's not there, just run. Just,
oh, absolutely.
They're all freaking out.
Don't force it.
Jesus. And I'm like, you know, do your effing job and I'll do mine. Right? Yeah, I mean, right. I had to take charge of the hole right now. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, I got this. You just do your job. You give absolutely. Me time, I'll make the throw. Shut them up, right? So I walk out of the huddle and I'm walking up and I look at the linebackers and they're on their heels. Mm. And I'm like, what? They're not going to blitz.
They're not going to blitz.
And I'm in it, and I relaxed like it was like this is going to be easy.
Yeah,
it's crazy you think that, right?
Right.
But I was like, wow. And I knew I had him because of the quick count. So we were being a step ahead.
Oh yeah.
And I love the quick count, right? So bang, I snap it, and I'm into my drop and turn back protection. You know, people always ask that, why they do turn back. Well, it was great protection, right?
Yeah.
It was all about the route setup. Yeah. The guys up front did their job. Plenty of time to throw. And Vince Workman was so open. They jumped the underneath receiver. Yeah. I forget. It was probably Everett Ross who was running off on the outside. The corner ran with him. I mean, it was so open.
Yeah.
And I threw a seed. You know, I hit Vince Workman right between the four and the two. Like, yeah. It was an absolute rope.
Yeah.
And it's funny because Vince commented. I posted the picture of me in the pocket on my Facebook page yesterday.
Yeah.
And Vince commented, like, you know, did you complete the throw? I'm like, yeah. Why'd you run out of bounds?
Right.
So he catches it.
Trying to get
it.
Some rack here.
He catches it. Like, as he's going out of bounds, and he, mind you, he was a running back converted to receiver that
yeah,
year.
Yeah.
And he's got a yard to go, like, before the sideline. And he yeah. catches it and, like, just walks out of bounds. There's nobody near him. if you look at the film, he just catches it and keeps his feet. I mean, he might score.
Right.
So, but we pick up 20-some yards. I don't know. Now we're down in field goal range. And I'm like, let's go. Next play, let's go. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, let's go. Let's finish this thing.
Yeah.
And Tom Tupa comes trotting on the field. And it was just the weirdest feeling. Like, damn.
Right.
I want to finish this thing.
Absolutely.
You know?
You get all that buildup, you get that amped up, you get that much adrenaline, then you make the play, and it's like, all right, good job, you did it. Now come watch.
And you know, and that's where this for me in the big picture, my confidence went through the roof. And I mean, I could have finished the drive. There's no doubt. I mean, I'm like, let's go. We're yeah, gonna end this thing. Absolutely. I got it.
You got momentum. Confidence and momentum.
Exactly, which is huge.
Huge.
And but I'll tell you, the biggest hit of the day was when I got to the sideline and Chris Spielman grabbed me and headbutted me. Now, that I went to my knees. I'll just tell you that. But so Tom Tupa comes back in and he takes the team down. We bleed out the clock and Matt France gets redemption, kicks a field goal.
Yeah.
You know, we win 23-20. And that locker room, you know, with your grandpa celebrating his last Ohio State victory against Michigan up there, that team up north, was by far the best locker room I've ever been in my life, bar none.
Yep.
And I remember it just embracing him in a locker room and looking at him in the face, and we couldn't speak.
Yeah.
Nothing needed to be said. And it's just, we were both, I mean, I'll never forget it. I couldn't speak because the emotion was so intense.
Yep.
But we both knew, I mean, and I, like, just saying this, like, it just, I tear up thinking about it. But to be able to send him out a winner on that day was incredible. And for me, I guess the moral of that long story was it was a dream come true to be able to be put in a situation like that and to pull it off.
Yeah.
And it boosted my confidence going into the next year.
And ultimately that your coach said, you know what, I have confidence that he's going to make this play. And that just breeds your own self-confidence moving forward, right? I mean, it's just...
Well, and if you've ever been... I'm not sure if you had the ability to see many practices back in the day, but you probably know it through Urban.
Oh, yeah.
That with Earl, you had to survive his practices prove to him that you could play.
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain to people, like, my first 2 years at Ohio State, I just wanted to survive practice without getting my ass ripped.
Right.
And it didn't happen. And it never happened. And so by the time I got in the field, I was like, holy cow, this is cool. Cause he's on the sideline. He can't come out and rip my ass. And right. This is great. Right.
I'm away from him.
I like it.
Right.
It's easier out here. So people will say, how do you play in front of 100,000 people? I'm like, well, you get it. You know, it's easier than practice. Let
right.
me tell you.
That's the biggest thing that I think Urban did. I know that my grandfather did, and some even great players, Michael Jordan's and people like that, is it's just so intense and hard. And you've been down there this year even. I'm curious, what is the atmosphere at practice now with Ryan Day compared to practices you've been to in previous years? I'm sure it's not that different, but it's got to be somewhat different.
I would say it's different. To me, coaching, and you can answer this. I mean, I feel like coaching has changed in the sense that these coaches today, and I'm going to assume most schools are like this. I know they're not all like this, but they maximize their time.
Yeah.
High tempo. They get a lot of value out of every rep. Not a lot of coaching in between reps.
Yep.
And that window's tight, and that's by design. If
absolutely.
I'm, right?
Absolutely.
You know, I've only went to one practice this year, and I was thoroughly impressed just with the tempo of the practice.
Yeah.
You know, the intensity is really more in the reps, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's where it's changed. I mean, I think back in the day, Coach Bruce would stop practice and undress somebody, you know, and really, you know, lay it on them.
Yeah.
I don't see that as much now. You know, maybe there's a time and a place for that, but it's more about maximizing the value of the reps. And, you know, you can go back and watch some of the film afterwards or before.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's changed. But there's still an intensity.
For sure.
You know, that has to be there. And that's that intensity is set by the coaches and the leaders of the team.
Absolutely. And Ryan's always been that type of coach, and having guys like Mickey Marotti still on staff obviously helped that. Mm-hmm. But I will say that, I mean, I'd really known no different program than Urban Meyer's. I mean, I was two other stops with two of his disciples, I guess mm-hmm. you would say. Mm-hmm. But to a man, anyone that I knew, NFL scouts, friends that would that knew football would come watch, it was always the same, that just the tempo and intensity of practice was wildly different from everywhere else except Alabama. That was always what they said. Wow. They said, I mean, Clemson, you name a place.
Okay.
There's two, Ohio State and Alabama. And it used to piss Urban off too, because he was like, no, it's supposed to be one,
right?
Like, just us.
Right.
But they all say, all the NFL scouts would say it. Like, this is just the tempo, how efficient, and the intensity is just mm-hmm. through the roof.
And I would say that, again, I think some of what Coach Bruce did rubbed off on Urban, and the sense of urgency.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was a sense of urgency, and you could call it puckering, but like, you know, there was it was different.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen that in many other, maybe anywhere else.
No.
And when Urban took the job, people would ask me, well, how's he going to do? I'm like, well, he's going to win because he's going to will it. I mean,
yeah, right.
It's going to happen. And it ain't going to be fun.
No.
In most cases, but it's going to happen.
There's no other.
Is that a fair assessment? Because you were in those doors.
There was no other alternative.
Right.
It was going to happen one way or the other.
Right.
And it was a matter of how miserable you wanted to be while it happened. It's just reality of it. It was like, we can do this. Like, everyone do it my way, do it the way I want. And it's everyone's the best position coach in the United States of America. Every player's the best player in the United States. And if that's how it happens, we're going to really enjoy it. If it's not that, it's going to be miserable, but we're still going to win.
Right.
Ultimately.
Right. Well, and again, that's so, you know, Coach Bruce had that attitude. And I think Urban really, that was instilled in him, obviously. Oh,
and he'd be the first to tell you that.
Yeah.
That was all from Earl Bruce.
Yeah.
For sure. What, tell me about just the feeling. So here's what, I'll give you my coach's perspective.
Okay.
When I walked out on the field in Ann Arbor or at home, didn't matter. Ann Arbor, probably a little heightened. It felt entirely different from any game, Big Ten championship, national championship, you name it, bowl games, Michigan State, Penn State. It felt entirely different. Just the aura. I mean, I don't even know how to put it into words. It just felt entirely different. Like you knew this game was unlike any other. And that's a coach. I can't imagine. I'm sitting here like, well, I'm just going to make sure my guy runs the right route and he gets the adjustments. Like, as a player, especially a quarterback, like, I can't imagine the nerves and just how and the focus and just how you felt.
Yeah, the answer is yes. I can remember the bus rides.
Right.
And just the juice flowing through you on the bus ride. Like, and it's just 2 hours before the kickoff, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
You're listening to your music, and I mean, you're coming out of your skin.
Yeah.
In 1988, the first year I started in this game was at Ohio Stadium. It took me the entire first half to settle down.
Oh,
I literally bet.
I
was so jacked up. And I remember I threw a couple balls, like I threw a dig so high, right at the free safety. He couldn't catch it because it was going 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And my arm was good. It wasn't that good, but it was like, I mean, I was amped up.
Yeah.
And it took me that long to settle down. Literally a half of football.
Yeah.
1989, you don't know this story, but it'll give you an example of the excitement level. So 1989, we play up there. And, you know, we stayed at a hotel. It was probably 40 minutes away, whatever. And I was rooming with another quarterback who's a prominent broadcaster now on that other network. And the room next to us was like an adjoining room, two offensive linemen whose names I will not mention, but they were large people, and none of us could sleep. And we were having the giggles in our room because we just, you know, it's midnight and you're like, you know, how am I going to sleep? Like, you couldn't sleep, right?
Right.
And there's all kinds of noise happening in the room next to us. So let's just say that when we finally went over there to look, that if you can imagine a tornado going through a hotel room,
right,
that's what it looked like. Either everything was pulled out of the wall or it was thrown out the balcony. We were on a second level out to the courtyard. And I'm talking television, cable set, chairs, the beds are turned up. I mean, absolute destruction.
It's insanity.
Destruction. That one never hit the news, fortunately. Yeah. I'm not sure what the bill was. But talk about nervous energy. I mean, that stuff didn't happen at other places. And again, I remember the bus rides going in because you're so jacked.
Like coming out of your shoes.
And you're right. Like, I remember the first play, like in 89, like it was so surreal because there was so much buildup and the play's called and you're here and you're like, and to be able to settle into a game like that's a challenge.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that year I got better at it. I settled in a little bit quicker, you know, but to get past the hype is hard.
It's hard.
That's tough.
And it's hard because it's hard enough playing at Ohio State. I mean, just you go out in front of that crowd on that field in any game. That's a lot to manage mentally. And then you throw into the formula that it's this game. It's just different. It's
now, I will tell you, by the time I was a senior and we played again at Ohio Stadium, I wasn't as jacked.
Yeah.
Because I had been there a couple times.
Yeah, right. You're weathered.
And I get the feeling, you know, like how Tom Brady feels now. Maybe a little bit, not a lot, right? But it's like, okay, I've been here a couple times. I get it, you know. I kind of let everybody else have that juice, you know, and I was just going to save my energy for the game.
Yep.
So by the third time starting, I kind of got to that place. Yeah. But man, those first couple.
That's also not a common place for any quarterback at Ohio State to walk in a third time starting against Michigan. I mean, that's not something that Justin Fields will do. That's not something that really anyone gets to do. That's a testament to, one, your place in Buckeye history, but also it must be nice to have that much experience going into that third one.
Well, it's different now because most of those guys, you're not going to be around that long, right?
They're not going to be here.
But thank you. And I just, for me, it was, you know, I tell young quarterbacks now, it was a decision.
Yeah.
That's my job.
Yep.
Like, that's not anybody else's job. I mean, I'm buddies with those guys in a room, but one guy's going to play, it's going to be me. And I even came in a coaching change when they didn't want me.
Yeah, true.
And I had a chance to transfer, but I decided, you know, I'm your guy. You can say all along you want to play somebody else, but I'm your best guy. You got to play me.
Yeah,
and that happened.
And nobody is dumb enough to not play the best quarterback, ultimately. Like, whether it's your guy, you recruited him, whatever. You're going to put the best guy on the field if you want to win and keep your job.
I would argue some of those guys were near dumb enough, but you know, but I overcame that.
Good point.
Won't mention any names.
I might have been around one or two that is dumb enough for sure.
Sure.
Well, talk to me now about this team. What do you see out of specifically Justin Fields? Give me the quarterback perspective on what you see out of Justin Fields, the Georgia transfer.
Well, I think a couple things stand out to me. Number one, what you go way back in the spring, and he the first challenge for him was to fit in.
Yeah.
And that's not easy when you're an outsider to win the team. Because if you're the potential guy, I mean, that's you're filling some big shoes there.
No doubt.
And you got to have some chemistry and win that team over. So he did that. And I'm sure that wasn't easy. I heard the first couple of days here weren't, you know, were pretty challenging, but he did that. You know, and I think he went to work in the spring and in the summer of really, you know, maximizing day by day to learn and grow. And I think if I look at what he's done, as an overview, he's done a tremendous job of taking care of the football.
Yeah.
You know, and you've talked about this a lot. I mean, I think his fumbles are probably the worst thing. Like, he's had more fumbles, and he coughs one up. Was it one or two Saturday?
So he coughed up three. Now, only two were turnovers. But throwing the ball, he had one pick on the year.
I mean,
that's unheard of.
And Ryan Day even said, that's my bad.
You know,
They had him in a bad play call versus a coverage. And, you know, again, that's when he can learn that, you know, it's not the good fit, throw it in the stands.
Absolutely.
But he's done a tremendous job of taking care of the football. And, you know, he's an excellent pocket passer. I mean, he
really is.
I go back to I went to practice back in August. They had a day for former players to come out, which was phenomenal. Had a blast. There was over 120 guys there. Really cool. And I really wanted to watch his footwork. Very impressed with his footwork. It was the last day of camp, which a lot of times is like, ugh.
Yeah,
you know, you're like, can we get this? As a player, you're like, this sucks. You know,
ready to get this
and
over
he
with.
He was extremely efficient.
Yeah.
Accurate with the football. I really saw sound fundamentals. You know, and I knew he was going to get great coaching between new quarterback coach and Ryan Day. I mean, you know.
What more could you want?
And you have all the skill around. And I talked to Kevin Wilson that day, and I think I've shared this with you. And I got a real sense, Kevin Wilson, that they had a great plan for the first five or six games to really bring him along.
Yeah.
And everything came together. You know, you developed his confidence. And I've seen the maturation, especially the last probably month, of getting rid of the ball quicker. Because you've talked about that in your podcast.
That's my biggest thing. And it's not only on him, but he definitely holds onto the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, him and Jalen Hurts are like almost like you feel horrible for the O-line sometimes.
And again, that's part of just, you know, getting more live reps, you know, live bullets. And he has improved on that. And I think they've ridden that fine line of, boy, the kid's a 4.4 and he's 230. You can run him a lot, but big risk if he's not on the field.
Big risk. And I think that also goes back when I really think back on what I've watched all year, is they know that they have one guy. And so a lot of stuff they've done in the throw game until this past two games was a lot of more max protection. Mm-hmm. Maybe slower developing, because they're really saying, all right, we cannot get this kid hit. Mm-hmm. We can't go 5-man pro. We need to go 7-man pro. And you know what? It might take a little longer. And though I think there are definitely examples where he needs to get the ball out of his hands. Mm-hmm. But that was part of it's by design, mm-hmm. to protect him.
Right. But I would say, you know, he's, from what I could tell, I wish I had the time to dig in deeper and really look, you know, is he making the reads? Is he not, you know, a couple plays that I broke down from Saturday's two touchdown passes, you know, were excellent reads.
Yep.
And if I listen to your replay, from Monday, a little late on the throw to Olave,
but he
threw it high and outside.
Yeah. He
put it in a great spot.
No doubt.
Could have got rid of it, you know, a split second. I'd thrown it earlier, just saying. But but his footwork in that play was excellent.
Yeah.
And because one thing I teach my young quarterbacks is I call it a bump into your throw.
Yeah.
So after, because his fake was from the left.
Yeah, right.
And that's not an easy task. When you get a turn and throw.
Flip your hips.
25 yards down the field to the right. But he took that little bump step, which gave him momentum and energy towards the throw, which, you know, I always teach, if you can do that, you want to do that. And that was huge. So that was throws on the money, and the one to KJ was a great read.
Oh, phenomenal.
Because you had man coverage across the field. And to me, that was a little bit of a challenging read because the free safety was to the left.
Yep.
But he looked to his right.
Mm-hmm. He held him.
And he froze the safety, and the safety was done. The safety wasn't a factor on that play. And KJ, I think, just made it. It was a simple move. There was no fake.
No,
he just flat beat him.
Yeah, KJ's so efficient when he runs routes. Yeah. I mean, he's not the fastest guy. Matter of fact, he gets made fun of to this day by the other receivers for being so slow. Mm-hmm. Even though he's not that slow, but you know, compared to Paris Campbell or Terry McLaurin, he was definitely the slow footed one. But he's so efficient that he looks faster than he is.
And that's a great analysis, and you would know that, right? Because that's a play where, you know, he could put a move on, but he chose not to, and it was the right decision because he just blew by. I mean, whoever's covering him got toasted. I mean, he was trailing right away. Pretty easy throw. And the other guys, there were two on two on the right-hand side, both man covered. They didn't get open.
Yeah.
I think one of them was Olave. He got collisioned.
Yep.
One of them might have been one of the other tight ends. Now, as I watch them, like, that's their improvement for next week. You got
to
get open.
You have to.
Because there's no safety over the top.
Right.
Pre-snap, that probably would have been a really good read, right?
But absolutely. And I mean, you look at it, if he doesn't do a good job holding the safety on that play, or if the safety just says, this is my mismatch and I'm gonna overplay KJ Hill, you got a problem.
Right.
If the boundary's not open, right?
Right. Right. So, but that throw was on the money. That throw was spot on and perfect execution because he looked to the right to hold the safety and then he delivered a perfect strike.
Yep.
And that play looked easy, you know, and that's not necessarily easy. It's about the pre-snap read.
You love those plays that look easy. Yeah. When you know they're not, you're like, that was easy.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but that was, you know, so he has shown tremendous accuracy. And again, I mean, what are we nitpicking? Look at his stats. I mean, it's
ridiculous.
It's a joke.
Ridiculous.
It's a joke. And they could run him more. I mean, again, if you know, Chuganov is you know, it's not the same, right?
No.
You got a big drop off. But, you know, and I'm wondering if the mantra isn't to run him more, because against Penn State, he ran quite a bit.
Yeah, he ran a ton in early, too. Not like, oh, it's a tight game, we need to do it. It was like, it was almost like there was this definitive point in the season where Ryan Day said, all right, here we are. We have a three-game run and then the playoff. The chains are off, man. It's just go.
To quote one Earl Bruce, I want a pound. Everybody's expendable. Right. Everybody.
Right.
I don't care.
Right.
And that's the sense I got as much as they ran him. And I was, you know, I'm wondering, like, is that a precursor to what we're going to see this week?
I think it's going to – it definitely looks like it will be, especially with the defense that Michigan has. And I think it's going to be a hell of a test for Ohio State. I think this I've said it for probably 4 or 5 weeks now, and I don't know that it's even – I think pretty much everyone has targeted this game as the game that Ohio State really, really is going to be tested.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the Shea Patterson has underperformed. Their offense has been lackluster. They have some freaky jump ball receivers. Mm-hmm. Their quarterback is a decent athlete. Mm-hmm. And they have a stout defense.
Yeah.
And so, and what I'm interested to hear your opinion on is, what do you think the benefit that Ryan Day and Ohio State have right now, having stolen Greg Madison and Al Washington? And really, I mean, you're talking about they have insight into the mind of the madman, Don Brown, right now. Mm-hmm. And that's valuable, don't you think?
I think it's highly valuable. I really do. And I think, as I thought about that as this week has started, because, you know, not only Don Brown, but Coach Harbaugh, you know, they know how they've prepared the last couple of years and can talk, you know, because as coaches, you're, you know, early in the week, you're like, what are they thinking? What are they going to do to us? You know, you self-scout a little bit. How are they going to respond to us? And knowing that Greg and I were there last year, you know, knowing what Don Brown's plan was, which didn't work.
Didn't work at all, right.
At all. You know, they can better anticipate. It's not, you know, you still got to make the plays. You still got to prepare. But I think those insights are very important when those guys have been in that camp.
It is.
Because you know Don Brown's got to be thinking, I want my shot. You know, you're coming up here. I'm getting even.
Oh,
he's a competitor, right? He's thinking that.
And just both, like you said, both sides. I mean, it's not only do Madison and Al Washington want to have that, I guess, I don't want to call it revenge, but they're ready for this one. Mm-hmm. They've been thinking about this one since they made the decision to drive down I-75. Mm-hmm. They know this is the game. And and you and I talked about it before we got on here, but I saw that a year ago with Ryan Day, because Ryan Day was the coordinator in Boston College. Don Brown was the defensive coordinator. And there was this level of respect, but I really want to kick your ass. It was so cool to watch, because he talked about him constantly and what he would do. And you saw the result last year. It was just phenomenal.
And I get that. And I appreciate you sharing that, because I experienced that. Now, it's on the high school level, but, you know, I was a coordinator in high school.
Yeah.
And you go against your defense coordinator every day in practice. Every day. And you want to kick their ass.
Every day.
All the time.
Yep.
No matter what.
Absolutely.
So when you told me that, I'm like, oh, I get it now.
Right.
Now I see the bigger picture.
I even thought about it more so, because Boston College was just average on offense when Ryan was there. Mm-hmm. They didn't have great skill players. And Don Brown's defense at Boston College was, I mean, top 4 or 5 mm-hmm. in the country. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure Ryan got his ass beat in pretty much daily in Boston. And he was really looking forward to having the checkers to compete and kind of expose Don Brown's defense. And you look at last year, it worked.
But again, I've said this to you, that at some point that goes away, though, because, you know, it's who's got the better players. To me, this is a game of the coaches got to make the right chess moves throughout the week.
Yep.
But to me, you can't screw it up, because coaches have screwed this game up.
Yeah.
And I've witnessed it. So it's like you got to get your players prepared to play and still be loose, mm-hmm. you know, and not all puckered up. And that's a challenge as a coach.
Yeah.
But sometimes you can take it too far, and you get those guys, what they're too tight and they're not ready to play, or you put them in the wrong position. And we've seen that happen.
Yeah. I'm most excited. I'm excited for both sides of the ball, but I really am curious to see what is Josh Gattis and what is Michigan's plan going to be against this defense? Because right now, when I watch Penn State, arguably had the best skill set on the perimeter that Ohio State has played all year. Mm-hmm. Maybe not even arguably, they do. Mm-hmm. And they made a conscious decision, albeit they couldn't win on deep routes against Okuda and against Damon Arnett and the new kind of defense that this defense has presented all year. Or they said, we can't block this kid, Chase Young, for long enough to throw it downfield. And so I'm just interested to see, because Michigan's going to trot out a much better skill set on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. And that's what they are. They're a deep ball team. They're mm-hmm. they're a down the field team. And so I'm curious, what is the plan going to be, and how's that going to go?
Very interesting. And the thing that if I'm looking at that team up north, and my concern for them is, when I just look at the stats from last week against Indiana, they ran the ball for, I believe, 86 yards.
Yep.
That's not much.
No.
And it's November. And you got to play in this game this week. You know, you better be able to run the ball and control the line of scrimmage. And that's a concern. Now, again, maybe if you're that team up north fan, you can say, well, you know, Che Patterson took advantage of what Indiana gave him. And
right.
Credit. He had a great game.
He did.
He's playing a lot better. I would argue they've not taken advantage of those big receivers the last couple of years.
I agree.
I mean, where's the disconnect there? I don't get that.
Yeah, I think the buck stops with Jim Harbaugh. I mean, I've heard all the analysis, and I've had my own opinions on Josh Gattis coming in, never calling plays. And it's like, how many times can you blame your coordinator as an offensive guy until you look in the mirror and you say, yep, nope, it's me. I'm the issue.
Right.
And to be honest, as good as he was, Urban had that moment where Ryan Day came in and he said, I'm part of the issue. I'm going to step out and let Ryan just do it. Mm-hmm. And when he did, it was like explosion on offense. Like, here we go. And I think that's really what it lies in. Jim Harbaugh wants to step out, but he doesn't. He can't.
He's still got the clamps on there.
Still got them on.
And, you know, and again, I can relate from a high school standpoint. You know, my first stint as a coordinator, you know, I had the cuffs on me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I wanted the deal, but my coach wouldn't give it to me. And I have a lot of respect. And I had to earn that.
Yeah.
And that takes a while.
That's for sure.
But it's tough for a head coach that's a control freak.
Right.
You know, different dude.
And especially if, let's say, he did go hands off and say, all right, you got it. And then they come out the way they did early in this year, how quickly his hands are right back around the throat of that offense.
Right. Well, that's a good question. And I like Shea Patterson. I'm a quarterback, right? I mean, I like to see those guys have success. And I think somehow Michigan's got to be able to run the football a little bit this week. If they can't run the football, you're not going to convince me Shea Patterson's going to beat that defense.
No.
If he's got to sit back there and throw it all day long.
No
against
way.
That pass rush and that secondary, that's a tall order.
It's going to be a long day if they can't run the ball. And that's been their issue all year. Well, that's one of their issues all year.
Right.
But then the other side of the ball, I want to see if Justin Fields can throw the ball against probably the best defense he's going to play until the playoffs. And I want to see, can Justin Fields go out and throw the ball against that secondary? Because I don't care what any ranking says. I know the personnel that Ohio State has played, and Michigan has great personnel in the secondary, really everywhere, but they have some legitimate players in the secondary, and Ohio State's receivers have played well, but there hasn't been that dominant. When you watch Alabama play, they have three or four guys you're going to watch in the NFL forever. You watch Clemson play, three guys that you're like, holy cow, those are NFL first-round draft picks. Ohio State, I think, has that skill on the perimeter, but you haven't seen it all year. You've seen flashes from Ben Victor. Chris Olave is the one probably most consistent. Mm-hmm. KJ's been very, very good. Mm-hmm. But I want to see them do that against the best competition, because they're going to have two teams coming down the road that it's going to crank up another notch.
I think it's a good point. I think that's well said. I mean, you can fall asleep like, hey, we keep winning all these games big and everybody's making plays, but, you know, who was really stepped up there? And that's a good point. So that's going to be a big test for those guys. And I go back to the running game, though, because, you know, I want to see him aggressive throwing the ball, which we've seen certainly this year. But to me, we've had success up there in the last couple of years. If I think back to 2 years ago, you know, we ran the ball quite well.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the two-headed monster running back, right?
Oh, yeah. Mike Weber and
Mike Weber, right. And Mike Weber had a big game up there, if I recall.
Oh, yeah. He always did. He was a Detroit kid.
Yeah.
You know what's funny about Mike Weber? It's kind of side note. His best games, and when he looked like a first-round draft pick running back, every year he played, look back at it, Michigan State and Michigan, every time. The two schools that he just really wanted to stick it to. It was unbelievable. Like, you'd go to Michigan, and you're like, don't worry, Mike's going to be really good today.
Right. I mean, and, you know, Dwayne stepped up in that game, obviously, but run the football.
Yeah.
You know, to me, late in the game, we really pulled away by running the football. And that's the thing with, you know, with J.K. And certainly Fields. I think, you know, Fields, it's all hands on deck this week. If he's got to run the football 15, 20 times, so be it. That's a 12th guy on offense. I mean,
the advantages are too much to not do it.
Right.
At this stage in the season, in a game like this, how do you not?
So I got to think Ryan Day is going to have some fun with this game. I mean, you know, because he can dictate to me with the talent and skill he has. You know, so I can't wait to see that chess match of how Don Brown's going to come up this year.
Because,
you know, it's he got embarrassed last year, so he's got a chip on his shoulder. So it's I don't see this being a blowout game. I think this is going to be a tight ball game, and we're going to take their best shot. And our team's got to respond.
I agree. I think this game is going to come down to turnovers, simple as that. Yeah. I mean, this is not going to be a close game unless one team – or it is going to be a close game unless one team just gifts the other team a win. If we turn the ball over three times like we did Penn State, I don't think this goes the Buckeyes' way. I really don't.
Well, and if I have a concern is where is our team, like, from a momentum standpoint? Because you have the Maryland and the Rutgers. It's like, are you gaining momentum with that as a coach? Mm-hmm. Those are tough weeks.
Yeah.
Right? And then you play Penn State and you get out to a big lead, but then you cough it up three times and you hang on.
Yep.
You finish strong, but not the prettiest of ball games.
Right.
So what direction is our team going?
Yep.
Because if we're not going up, then we're going the other direction. And that's not a good thing.
Well, it's not the time to do it either.
No.
Not down this stretch.
So, you know, I think that's got to have their full attention this week. You know, yep. They got to clean it up because, you know, how many teams turned over three times like we did?
It's so rare.
You talked about your podcast on Monday. I think it was 17 points.
17 points.
You fumble on the inch yard line.
Yeah.
That's a 7-point swing.
Going in to score.
Right.
Like diving in to score.
I mean, I remember when that happened, I went, ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's a bad.
Those come back to haunt you.
Yeah.
And that really was a factor in the second half. Then you give up 10 more points off the fumbles in the third quarter. You know, you don't normally win those games. No. I hope people understand that.
No, you.
In most cases, you lose those games.
Only if you're that much better. And what's funny is the other game I can think of, which is a horrible example because we won this game also, was when we played Oregon in the national championship game. We turned the ball over, I think,
four
or five times, and we ended up still winning the game, but we were that much better than them.
Yes.
So when you're not, like, had we done that against Alabama, oh my God, we would have been ran out of the stadium.
Not happening.
And so this is a game where I think turnovers is so big. Just protect the football.
Well, and agree, because in a setting like this, you're going up there. Ooh. If you turn it over right up there and they cash it in, the whole feel changes. And you get that momentum. You know how big you feel or how little you feel when you're standing like that and something happens? You feel like a little piece of dirt. Like it's not pleasant.
No.
And the whole dynamic changes and their belief goes through the roof.
Yep.
And what you can't give them is belief because they don't have it deep down right now. But if you give it to them, they'll take it.
That's it. Michigan's going to ride into the stadium with this false bravado, this false confidence where they're done getting beaten. This is going to be the year that they get it done. And it's all going to come down to, do they find some concrete evidence of that belief early in the game, or does it get taken away from them immediately?
Yeah.
I mean, you jump out 14 points and all of a sudden you're going to see that Michigan team go, oh shit, here we go again. But you let them jump out 10-0 and they're going to be like, yep, told you this is our year. And it's just what happens early is so critical.
It is. Well, I mean, Ohio State could jump out 14-0, but like last week if they fall asleep and Michigan comes back in the game, then,
no doubt.
You know, again, you ignite that crowd. That's a challenge of going on the road anywhere, but in this game especially.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun one to watch.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Yes.
Well, I appreciate you coming in, Greg. Really appreciate it. I know people really will enjoy everything, your analysis, but also just some of your reflections on your experience with the game.
Well, it is the game, and it's I think the one thing I'll end with is respect.
Yeah.
You know, of the opposing team and guys we played against, and I still keep in touch with some of those guys today.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's Facebook or you see them time to time, and I had amazing respect for those guys.
That's the coolest thing about this game, I think, is that there is that respect involved, where it's I've been a part of other rivalries and other conferences that might be down south that will remain nameless, and there was no respect. It was all about disrespect. Mm-hmm. And though I've seen from growing up in your era when you played, I think it's trended away from – there's still respect there, but it's trended away a little bit. More to the Florida states of the world as far as respecting your opponent, but there's still respect there.
You know, and it's interesting because I talked about with you earlier that there was no trash talking. At least I didn't hear it. Maybe was with the receivers and DBs.
Right.
But for the most part, I didn't hear it. It was a quiet game in between plays because it was so intense.
Yeah.
It was like, why spend energy on that when I got to be focused on my play, right?
That definitely has changed.
Yeah, I know that has changed.
That part has changed. I've witnessed it, both on national TV with ejections and also in the craziest part about Michigan that I think is wildly under-talked about is the fact that both teams use the same tunnel. Like there's forced interaction with your rival, like pregame, as you run out of the tunnel, halftime. Like they're right there. And I mean, there was some heated back and forths in that tunnel that are very uncommon. Most of the time, you have two tunnels.
I think it's important to go in at opposite times.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but I was sharing with my son a story of playing at Michigan State in 1988, same tunnel, and both teams went in together at halftime. and there was an absolute melee.
Yeah.
Absolute. I mean, swinging. I mean,
I'm telling you,
it was craziness. And I'm walking in on that. I'm like, I stopped. I'm like, I'm not going there. I'm like,
right.
I mean, I saw helmets coming off. Really?
Yeah.
Helmets came off and guys are swinging helmets.
Imagine that.
Never happened before.
Never happened before. So that 2013, it happened. It happened where they felt like they were going to be chippy and when we came off the field, they burst open their locker room and started running their mouths. And it was me, Luke Fickell, and Mike Vrabel. So I say that because they obviously played the main role in keeping the team back, being much larger than I. But I helped. I helped a little bit. Yeah. I mean, we had to, like, I almost broke my arm trying to keep our football team in the locker room. It was insane. Very different. Very different. But I'm excited for it, man. This is my favorite game of the year. Always has been since I was born. So I'm excited about it. And I appreciate you coming in. I really do.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. We need to have you back on for sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Support for Menace to Sports comes from Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. I have to ask, have you ever groomed your pride and joy? I will tell you this. After our tailgate this past weekend, I had countless numbers of our listeners, subscribers that flat told me, they were like, man, that Manscaped stuff, everything that you talked about, I ordered it and it was a difference maker. And that's what we want from this show. So I would encourage you to check it out because Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 2.0. Inside the Perfect Package, you'll find their electric trimmer called the Lawnmower 2.0. This waterproof and skin-safe technology will protect you from nicking your sack. You can also create less mess by trimming in the shower. And of course, let's not forget about the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? The Perfect Package 2.0 also includes anti-chafing performance boxer briefs that keep your package cool and smelling fresh all day. For on-the-go freshness, you'll love the Crop Reviver Ball Toner Spray. It's time to get clean with this Perfect Package 2.0. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code MENACE at manscaped.com. Always use the right tools for the job. Your balls will thank you. Again, get 20% off and free shipping with the code MENACE at manscaped.com. For our listeners only, special exclusive offer. That's 20% off with the free shipping at manscaped.com. Make sure you use the code MENACE. All right. Well, I appreciate you guys tuning in. I appreciate you listening. I'm really excited. That was one awesome, awesome time with Greg Fry in the studio. We're going to have to bring him back. I've respected his opinion and him as an analyst for, I don't know, 20 years. And very, very, very intelligent guy that understands the game and understands quarterback play as well as anyone I've worked with or coached with, which is really, really cool. But also really excited. Make sure you check out tomorrow's episode. Joshua Perry, national champion, NFL player, and now Big Ten network analyst is going to be on the show. Recorded with him today. And man, it was awesome. So just really want to give you guys a perspective into the greatest rivalry in all of sport. This is for anyone nationally that doesn't understand the rivalry or just wants to learn some more about it. So make sure you check it out. Make sure you tune in. Tomorrow's going to be a great episode. This was phenomenal. Really appreciate Greg coming in. And as always, if you're interested in sponsorship or advertising, reach out at Zach, Z-A-C-H, at Menace2SocietyPodcast.com. That's the number two. And stay tuned. We got some big, big things coming in December. So really excited about it. So again, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. A little longer episode. Hope you enjoyed it and hope you're entertained. And we will see you tomorrow.
Gil Elliott. And he's got an opening. Elliott off to the races. Can they catch him? No, they can't. Touchdown. 85 yards.
It's so easy to be average. It takes a little something to be special, Don. It takes a little something special to be a great player.
Braxton Miller is loose. Spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
We don't want to coach average. I don't want to be around you. Why be around average?
We're going inside him. We're going outside him. Inside him, outside him. And when we get him on a run once, we're going to keep him on a run. And we're not going to pass unless our secondary comes up too close. But don't forget, man, we're going to get him on a run. We're going to go, 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 go. And we aren't going to stop until we go to that goal line. Don't forget, man, today's the day we're going to win.
Menace to...